everybody. This is Again With This. Let's watch the series premiere of Gross Point. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
I'm not going to lie. I was kind of expecting. And now, here are your hosts, the gross Tara Ariano and the pointy Sarah D. Bunting. Hi, Sarah.
Well, you went ahead and did it anyway. Hello.
And hello to all of you Patreons. Thank you so much for your support and for your love and for joining us here today. Did you know that in the year 2000, the WB aired a single-cam sitcom set behind the scenes at a teen drama that bore a more than passing resemblance to Beverly Hills 90210 and which was co-created by Darren the Star, his very own self? It did. Today we're talking about its pilot, so let us journey back to that year, 2000, 20 years ago.
Oh.
May 17th, Fox airs the series finale of Beverly Hills 90210. Teens mourn. They're not sure how to go on. Just kidding. At this point, Fox is not where kids are watching TV because the WB exists and is where shows like Buffy and Charmed and Popular and Roswell and Felicity live. In fact, kids probably didn't care about the series finale of 90210 because everyone in it by that point was old as hell, and it aired opposite the anti-prom episode of Dawson's Creek, and they were way more hype for the actual finale of that show the week after, in which a crying Dawson told Joey to go be with Pacey, and she leapt onto his boat in what we can now say in retrospect was the high point of that series, I feel.
I think so.
Yeah, this is context I had forgotten when we talked about the world the 90210 finale aired in, by the way. Like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy that they crossed over it all, but they did for like three seasons.
Yeah.
Anyway, fast forward about 4 months. It's time for fall premieres. The WB has one called Gross Point. Clip one.
Previously on Gross Point.
I want to have a baby someday. Just not yet. There. I said it. I'm a horrible person.
Becky, I told you. The baby's my problem, too.
You're not making this decision without me.
God, Stone, how are you going to handle a baby? You couldn't even handle the 11th grade.
I will handle it. Because I love you, man.
Oh, my God. I can't believe he said it. Oh my God, Stone, look out!
I hit a deer.
How's Stone?
Stone's gonna be fine, sis. But you're the one Mom and Dad are worried about.
I left the game the minute I heard. I mean, how can I lead a cheer knowing my best friend's in the hospital? Thanks.
But sweetheart, the doctor told us there was a baby.
I know.
You lost it.
I'm so sorry, Mom. I lose everything.
It's okay.
Becky, I don't want you seeing Stone Anders ever again.
Sorry, I don't know anything about this show. Was that a show within a show?
Yes.
Oh, okay, thank God.
So thank you, Dave. In one sense, Gross Point is a teen drama set in the eponymous Detroit suburb, but it is also a single-cam sitcom set behind the scenes at the eponymous teen drama series. And if you heard that clip and thought, wow, someone really had some shit to work out against 90210, you're right. And that person was 90210 creator Darren Star, who co-created this show with Robin Schiff and cheated on his longtime home Fox to get it on the air when 90210's corpse was barely cold. So we'll circle back to both of them. But first, Sarah, we, of course, were running Television Without Pity at the time. Gross Point was on your team, I think.
Yes, it was.
Aaron recapped this, right?
Yes.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched it. I haven't seen it in the intervening 20 years. Jesus.
Yeah.
But yeah, I. it is still amazing to me that this like not only got on the air, like that they felt that they could step to 90210 in this way, but yeah. that it came from Darren Star. Like it's just amazing yeah. to me.
I know. It's crazy. So yeah, we know Darren Star, of course. He at this point had one screenplay produced, or sorry, before 90210 had one screenplay produced called Doing Time on Planet Earth. When 90210 hit the air, If Looks Could Kill with Richard Grieco, which he wrote, came out the next year. And the year after that, we got Melrose Place, and then he creates CPW in 1995. Remember that with Mariel Hemingway?
Brutal. Watch that too. Ooh.
that lasted a cool year. And then his next huge hit, Sex in the City, comes in 1998. So he probably really hasn't had a hand in 90210 other than his credit for a while. When Grosse Pointe actually gets to air, his last writing credit is on the season 5 finale, the Palm Springs episode. But you have to think he probably amassed a shitload of stories in 5 years and that he continued to hear more, you know, after that. But he heard tell of stuff that happened on the set.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And just a note about his ongoing career, last week, or actually as this episode is dropping today, Darren Star's latest show, Emily in Paris, dropped on Netflix, and Andrew Fleming, who directed The Craft and Dick, directed the pilot of Emily in Paris, and he also directed this pilot and several other episodes of Grosse Pointe. Just a little trivia note. So Robin Schiff, who co-created this, her very first writing credit is from the second season of Rags to Riches, which apparently there was.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know. I thought there was only one and stopped and was happier thinking that was all there was. But anyway, she wrote 3 episodes in season 2, including the Christmas episode. Things got better for her from there. She adapted her play The Ladies' Room into the screenplay for Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion. And she had just finished writing on the last season of Party of Five, which also happened in 2000, 2 weeks to the day before the 90210 series finale aired. So it really was Fox just like getting out of the teen drama business all at once in the spring of 2000.
Yeah.
And ceding the field to the WB, which like, yeah, good call.
Mm-hmm.
Because the WB's brand identity was so strong. So we don't glean that much about the plot of Grosse Pointe, the show within the show from the previouslys. There's a brother and a sister named Becky and Brad. Sorry, Brad and Becky. Becky is dating a guy named Stone. Brad's girlfriend's name is Kim. In reality, we come in on the production just as a new actor is about to join the cast over the recommendation of the network president. And apparently the network in question is the actual WB. Clip 2.
You guys, the network president's on one.
Oh, God, what does he want?
That he's calling about the new girl.
Rob, maybe we shouldn't have hired someone he didn't love.
Hope, relax. This is the genius who told Felicity to cut her hair.
Nah.
There are definitely some Dawson's-y elements in here that I assume we will be getting to.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. So the show's diva Hunter, who plays Becky, is freaked out about it. So that's kind of the whole episode plot. So let's go through the main characters from least to most integral, starting with Stone / Quentin Barbary King. That's the actor's name. He is played by Cole Suddeth. He's related to Skip Suddeth from Third Watch. I thought they were father and son. Apparently they are brothers. Who knew?
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was shocked to learn that, too. So broadly, he is the Dylan / Luke Perry. This is the least good match, I would say.
Well, and he looks like a poor man's Josh Charles, which is disconcerting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his storyline is that he is secretly bald. He wears a hairpiece, which is like kind of funny.
Well, and then he's supposed to be, I think, Ian Ziering and map onto that also.
Yes. Yeah. So he's in a public bathroom having the hairstylist like help him with his hairpiece when a Make a Dream kid comes out of a stall and sees him with his actual hairline exposed. And then the kid uses him to blackmail his way into getting a line added onto his like walk on the show. That's kind of it for him. He's short with the new girl about touching his hair. when they make out.
Yeah.
But yeah, good call on the poor man's Josh Charles. That I didn't lock in on that resemblance, but you're right. That is who he looks like for sure. All right, moving on. It's true. That's really all there is to say about him. Okay, then we have Brad, who the actor within the show's, his name is Johnny Bishop. The actual actor's name is Al Santos. He is broadly the Brandon. So he's definitely a better physical match for Jason Priestley than the kid they got for the Lifetime movie, for sure. Definitely around the eyes and around the mouth. Like, I see it. And from a distance, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And his story in the episode is that he is a slut and a dummy, and he sleeps with the extras. And
also that his on-screen dad is trying to bone him, which
allegedly. We'll get to that. So, yeah, I buy that there was probably a male cast member on a Darren Star show who was fucking extras. I don't get that vibe off Jason Priestley. Like, maybe it wasn't someone on 90210 at all. And if it was, my money would be on Zero, perhaps. I don't know why.
Same.
I get that from him. And we give Brandon a lot of shit, but I don't really get the impression that Jason Priestley is this much of a himbo. Let's play clip three.
Hey, check out how golden and downy these hairs are getting around my navel.
Wow.
They're kind of soft like chest hair, but yet sexy like pubic hairs.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you call this anyway?
I don't know, like chesty pubic tummy hair?
Yeah.
This poor PA is like, I hate this conversation. Oh, so
that
good.
Is future Oscar winner Nat Faxon, who won for co-writing the screenplay of The Descendants. So shout out to him. But yes, as Sarah was alluding, we also get this moment in the pilot, clip four.
I was shopping at the Beverly Center yesterday, and I saw something that had your name all over it.
Man, I'm so pissed. I told them they cannot be putting out merchandise without my permission.
Wasn't a doll, was it?
No, silly. I got you a gift.
Oh, thanks.
Just a little something. Not sure I got you the right size. Let's try it on.
Whoa, dude. A new wetsuit. Man, sometimes I wish you were my real dad.
Oh, too young to be your real dad.
That little is Richard, played by Michael Hitchcock, who plays Brad's dad on the show, watching him get undressed and try on this wetsuit. So, yeah, Sarah, do you want to explain why this has Dawson's Creek vibes?
Because allegedly John Wesley Shipp, a.k.a. The Flash, Mark One, who played Dawson's dad on Dawson's Creek, Mitch Leary, and died trying to fish an ice cream cone out of the footwell of his car. Mitch Leary did, not John Wesley Shipp.
Right.
There was a lot of barely hidden rumor that he was trying to get with James Vanderbeek and possibly others. I wonder if the Brandon analog is also maybe based a little bit on Joshua Jackson. I feel like that was something that was like in the air around Gross Point. I've got to like go on the Internet Archive and find the interview that Aaron did with Robin Schiff.
Yeah.
Which I think Robin Schiff was maybe not happy with because she maybe put some names to some allegations and then was like,
oops,
but that was off the record. Like, no, if it's off the record, you say it's off the record first. Not how it works. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a thing I forgot about from the storyline. So that was, yeah. And that was like such common knowledge. There were so many blind items about it that when this showed up, like, fans would have known what it was referring to. So
yeah,
it's funny.
Absolutely.
Okay. So then we have Laura/Courtney Scott. She's played by Bonnie Somerville, who had just played a Dylan one night stand on 90210 the previous year. So Wikipedia says that Courtney, the actress, is based on Jenny Garth. But other than her being blonde, I don't really see it particularly.
Yeah, I don't either.
So play clip 5, Dave, please.
I'm Courtney Scott. I'm playing Laura Johnson, your cousin who moves from West Virginia.
My cousin?
Yeah, you know, my parents were killed in that landslide and our fathers haven't spoken for years, but your folks were left as my guardians in the will.
Man, I have to start reading the script.
You mean you haven't read the script for this week's episode yet?
Nah, I never look at it until I get on set.
Oh, when do you prepare?
What do you mean?
I mean, when do you define your character objectives and do your sense memory work?
Never.
What about our character histories? How often did we see each other as children? Were you the one who taught me how to ride a bike? And did we ever play doctor?
I don't know. I never thought of all that.
Well, don't you think you ought to? I mean, I've been preparing for weeks, and how am I supposed to do my best work when you don't even know who I am?
So, to me...
I just assumed this was based on Tiffany Thiessen.
Oh, well, I think the character is. Like, I think the new character coming into the show for sure is, yeah. Other than the fact that, like, Shannon Doherty and Tiffany Thiessen never actually overlapped on the show. But, like, the actor bullshit, that sounds to me like Daphne Zuniga describing herself in the Melrose Stars in the House reunion. including realizing in retrospect how ridiculous it is to think that she would like have the luxury of defining Joe this much and, you know, having a chance to rehearse and think about any of this stuff. And given that she and Darren Star were college friends, I think she would probably be fine with him, you know, gently razzing her in this way, you know.
Yeah.
Other than her being a blonde. So, yeah, that's her. Then we get to the two who are really like, holy shit. So, Becky / Hunter Fallow. She's played by Irene Malloy, who I think didn't have the career she should have. And whenever you say this about a woman in 2020, you inevitably wonder why, and specifically which man molested her and made her want to quit the business. As we said, Hunter is paranoid about what it means for her that Courtney is being brought in, but she is also just a monster. Like, she will not meet the make a dream kid, and she weaponizes Marcy's insecurities against her. We're going to get to Marcy, but please play clip 8.
I know why they hired that new girl, but I'm not sure that you want to hear it. What? Tell me. Well, I saw this memo going around saying that you weren't sexy enough.
What? Are you serious? Where'd you see that?
On the set. I think it's horrible. I mean, you are so great on the show, even if the fans don't agree. But you saw that Entertainment Weekly poll.
I don't pay attention to that stuff.
But Robin Hope might.
You think?
If I were you, I'd go to their office and throw a fit. Because the more there is of Courtney on the show, the less there's going to be of you.
Oh. Hunter.
Yeah. I mean, definitely not Shando.
No.
Totally Shando. But there might be some Jenny Garth in there too. Who can say?
Who indeed? Yeah, she also has no problem throwing her own diva fits, as we hear in clip 9.
What the hell is going on here with my wardrobe?
What do you mean?
She's wearing my favorite pumps. And that is my slut top. Totally signature items.
But you gave them to her because she lost all her clothes in the landslide that destroyed her house.
I would never let her borrow those shoes. I can change.
No. Honey, Becky is so generous, she would let her cousin borrow anything.
Look, I told you after last season's gang rape that I'm tired of playing the victim. Becky is strong. She doesn't put up with crap anymore.
That's Shando.
Yeah.
That I feel like is Shando in a nutshell, perhaps.
Yeah.
But
and they're all terrified of her. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And naming her character Hunter, like Hunter.
Yeah.
So yeah. Good. Like, not subtle, but.
I don't get it. Oh, wait, I get it. Yeah.
But the pièce de résistance. oh my God, is Kim slash Marcy Sternfeld. She is played by Lindsay Stone, fresh up off playing Big Red in Bring It On, future Bird Bones in Playing House. And the thing about Lindsay Stone is that you don't look at her.
Isn't it Sloan?
Pardon?
Is it not Lindsay Sloan?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, okay. I heard Stone. Sorry.
Sorry. Proceed. The thing about Lindsay Sloan is that you don't look at her and instantly think Tori Spelling. But in this context, holy shit. Clip six.
Hold it. Why does she always have to thrust her boobs like that whenever she feels an emotion?
And look at her lips this week. They're enormous.
I read in an interview that she doesn't use collagen.
Yeah, and that's her original chin.
It's probably just a reaction to this Entertainment Weekly poll.
What are you talking about? Who's the sexiest cheerleader on television? Marcy came in last.
Behind Brittany on Daria.
Isn't she a cartoon?
So brutal.
It is brutal. I mean, there is a physical resemblance, but then she embodies what you imagine Tori Spelling's insecurities were like so well.
Yes.
That the resemblance increases.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is what we hear the producers say about her before we actually see her in action, other than in character. And then we see Marcy driving herself onto set, and this is what she is saying to herself in her otherwise empty car, clip seven.
I love myself. I love myself. I only eat healthy food. I only eat healthy food.
Oh, honey. And then she crams like a ho-ho into her mouth. Oh, so sad.
These affirmations keep coming up like, I deserve friends that like me. I deserve friends that like me, but she's never convincing herself, even on the first one. So sad.
Yes. The costuming too is like so of its time. She's like, even out of costume, she's in like a handkerchief top and like the lowest lowriders. Oh, God. 2000. What were we doing? I mean, I wasn't, but what were the kids doing?
Yeah.
So, according to Wikipedia, Aaron Spelling, who had a couple of shows on the network at the time, Seventh Heaven and Charmed were his shows, he called the WB's president to complain about how obvious it was that Marcy was based on Tori. So the entry on Wikipedia suggests that the characterization of Marcy changed. And I think we will do more of these episodes of Gross Point, so we'll see. But if that's true, it's a bummer because Lindsay Sloan is so good in this pilot. Oh, I mean, it's savage, but it's incredible.
She's always really good. Like, I mean, the fact that she can go from Plattered Nationals, hello, to this, to like, I knew her from somewhere watching Playing House. And then when I looked it up and I was like, holy shit, like she is able to, despite being, you know, distinctive looking and beautiful, like with a couple of styling tweaks, she's able to just like burrow into these characters that are supposed to be savage and funny and give them that humanity. And
yeah,
I wish that she worked more also. And I hope she does work a lot.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, even though the show is savage to this obvious Tory stand-in, like, I think what Lindsay Sloan brings to the character is that, like, she obviously has such a love for her. Like, it doesn't make the character look good, but you as the viewer, you do feel for her, like, in a way that you want to just, like, protect her and, like, fold her up in your arms. Like, take her away from all this, you know? So, anyway. So those are her characters. So when it comes time to shoot her first scene, Courtney is thrown by Marcy and Hunter. And after blowing two takes, Rob, the Darren Star avatar, is ready to fire her. But then Johnny gives her his trick, which is to just put your script on your stack of books and read it. And then Courtney does, and she nails the third take. And Marcy is terrified of how good Courtney is, and Hunter is furious. And we close out the episode in a very year 2000 fashion, clip 10.
Oh, Marcy, the limo's here to take you to MTV.
Hey, Marcy.
Yeah?
I really wasn't trying to push you into those lockers.
Okay.
And I just want you to know, for what it's worth, I think your work is really great on the show.
Really? Thanks.
Yeah, you always seem totally real and grounded.
That is so sweet.
So maybe we can go apartment hunting this weekend.
Yeah, great.
Okay, I'll call you.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that your new lesbian lover?
Very funny.
So you want to go to Skybar night? No, thanks.
Fine, loser. Stay home and read Entertainment Weekly.
I deserve friends who care about me. I deserve friends who care about me. Hey, Johnny! You want to come watch me host Loveline?
No, thanks.
Hey! Phone in a question!
Loveline. Oh. All star. Oh.
Handkerchief tops.
So, yeah, that's the Gross Point pilot. Any closing thoughts, Sarah?
I mean, not really. I always thought it was such a pity that this show didn't go any further. But sometimes, like, in retrospect, it's like, it's maybe it's better. But I kind of want to just rewatch the whole season and see if I'm right, that it's like, this is a perfect egg and they shouldn't have tried to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll definitely have to cover the remaining 16 episodes, you know, here and on this feed in the fullness of time, since we have the DVDs, like, why not? And I did go looking to see if it was anywhere, like, on Daily Motion, at least the pilot, which it was not, as far as I could find, but I did find the sizzle reel for the fall 2000 on the WB.
Oh, God.
We'll link it in the show notes. The promo with all of the stars of the WB out at a cool bar dancing to the cover of Oh What a Night. I sent it to Sarah in Slack on last Friday and was like, take me back here.
Oh my God. Like, truly. I'm shocked nobody in that promo was smoking a cigar, honestly.
Yeah. But just the implication that, like, Prue and Angel are trying to fuck, like, great. I don't mind.
I know. I'll watch that spinoff.
Yeah, honestly. So, yeah, that's the Gross Point pilot. Let's close it up with our final clip, Dave, clip 11.
Next week on Gross Point.
You said you weren't going to fly out of state.
Except for Yale. And they accepted me with a full scholarship.
Just how are you expecting me to feel right now, Brad?
It's only going to be 4 years.
4 years is a lifetime. Hi.
Man, your cousin's so hot.
Hello, everybody. This is Again with This, episode 23, Let's Watch, the series premiere of Models, Inc. And now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. Hello, Patreon supporters.
That's what I was about to say. Hello to our Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for your support and for joining us today. Why did the end of the second season of Melrose Place spend so much time introducing Amanda's mother, Hillary, her model clients, Sarah and Terry, and mention in passing that Amanda also has a half-brother named David? Just kidding. You know, between the season 2 finale of Melrose Place and the season 3 premiere of Melrose Place, Fox viewers got a bunch of episodes of its sexy new spinoff, Models, Inc. And today we're going to talk about the supersized series premiere, which you can still find online if you know where to look. Wink.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know. Nothing. In my memory, there was the Melrose finale and then Models, Inc. started like the next week. But I was forgetting that reruns were still useful for building audience at this point in TV history. And that Melrose was just ending like probably its buzziest season in all of its life.
Right.
So Melrose aired its finale on May 18th, 1994. And then Models, Inc. did not premiere for another 6 weeks or so on June 29th of that year. And then the first 9 episodes aired before the third season of Melrose premiered. They only took off 2 weeks in that time. Maybe if they hadn't, the show would still be on today. Just kidding. Maybe it would have gotten a second season. Probably not. So because the version of this episode that we found is from somewhere in the world, who knows where, still has the original music. It's actually wild what a different experience it is watching that than the episodes that we get on the DVDs with the sub music. I was not prepared for that.
No, I don't think I was either.
In this episode alone, we get Finally by Cece Peniston, Live for Loving You by Gloria Estefan, I've Been Hit by Your Love, also by Cece Peniston, and Fields of Gold by Sting.
I know.
For, you know, the wedding gown finale for the big fashion show, of course. What else?
Oh, God.
So let's get into it. I broke down the episode in, you know, a briefer version of what we do for our regular episodes. So I'll start with our C plot. A whole other model has a different abusive boyfriend. I was really surprised they went back to this.
Me too. Like 9 weeks is not enough time.
Come on.
Or 6 weeks. Sorry.
Yeah. So this, we can dispose of this one very briefly because it's hardly in the episode, honestly. I assume there's more to it as the series goes on. I don't think I watched this much when it was on. Maybe not at all. Anyway, her name is Linda. His name is Eric. It really seems lazy to do this again when it's how they introduce Sarah, although the form his abusiveness takes is slightly different. Not that we ever saw Sarah's shitty boyfriend Hank hit her. We just heard about it. But Eric's deal is, he just wants to be her manager, and so he's, like, intrusive in her career. And
yeah,
we also hear that he made her do porn, and then he, like, holds it over her head.
And he also looks a little like Peter DeLuise.
Yeah, he does.
Disconcerting. And then if you look this guy up now, like, all of his recent work, like, basically, this is, there's a whole bunch of interchangeably 90s mulleted blazer over a t-shirt dudes on this show with their Brad Rowe puffy lips. Remember Brad Rowe? Of course you don't. Even Brad Rowe is like, where
I
am
remember
I?
Brad Rowe.
thank you. But like he like the beefcake turned on him.
Yeah.
And I think once he lost his hair and started looking more like Dom DeLuise, he just became a camera operator. Also, he's a terrible actor, but that distinguishes him from on this show not at all.
No kidding.
Everyone is so bad.
Yeah, the only noteworthy thing in this plotline really is that at one point he dismisses her and her modeling career prospects by saying, like, everyone says you have the new look, but whatever, you know, you don't. That doesn't mean anything. But then as soon as he said it, was like, oh, fuck, she really does. She has black, jet black hair. It's like a chin length bob parted in the middle. She's pale as hell, and her eyebrows are plucked to Jesus. She's got the skinniest eyebrows you ever did see. She is exactly 1994. She's like, put her in a tank top, tie a flannel around her waist. Yes, that is the new look of models at that time, for sure.
Well, and that's the, like, except for her height, which isn't. She's the only one that you would, that you buy even a little model, like
Stephanie Romanoff, I would say.
Well, maybe, but that's only because Stephanie Romanoff is the worst actor among a very undistinguished core. But this is, you know, we may as well get the central problem of the show out of the way.
Yes.
Which is the same central problem that means we don't have shows about baseball, which is that, like, you'd think models and actors, there would be a, like, better Venn overlap, but, like, especially at this particular time, like, even at the time, this was Kate Moss time.
Yeah.
So you're looking at these, like, catalog glamazons, like, I'm not trying to be dismissive. I'm not going to be on the catalog for anything except, like, Wes Anderson extras. But, like, you know, that it's not credible.
Yeah.
But then acting is also hard. And designing is apparently also hard, but we'll get into it.
All right. So, yeah, that's the C plot. I originally had this as the A plot, and then as the episode went on, it kind of is the B plot in terms of how much time it takes up. Onward and upward for Terry. Terry has, who we met in Melrose Place, has gotten so big, she just turned down an offer from Victoria's Secret to Sarah's astonishment. Sarah the character, not our Sarah. Although, I mean, maybe you're astonished too.
Sorry. I was a little surprised. I was like, really? with that quote ass? Okay.
So at a staff meeting at the agency, which they have staff
in the morning with models.
No.
You know who's not there? Morgans.
No.
Also everyone else.
Right.
Not there.
That's not how it works. Like, you get a call, they send you somewhere and you go there. Like, you don't come to the office because you don't work there. Anyway, Terry announces in front of everyone, instead of privately to Hillary, that she wants to be released from her contract so she can go to a bigger agency. And Hillary takes it badly. Clip one.
This is your family, Terry. You can't just walk out on your family.
That's rich coming from you, ma'am.
Yeah.
But also, leaving aside Hillary's whole backstory, your job is not your family, it's your job, so shut up. Hillary, the boss bitch we were waiting to see on Melrose, then goes to find Terry's photographer boyfriend, Brian, who is played by Cameron Daddo, one of like a million Australians on this show for some reason. His accent, I'm not even sure it's supposed to be American. It's very strange and not convincing, whatever it's supposed to be.
I know.
Anyway, to tell him he has to convince Terry not to leave, or else Hillary will have him blacklisted around town. And he does try, but Terry figures out what he's doing and dumps him instead. So then she comes home to, again, other things that don't happen, comes home to this fancy model house. So it does occur in New York sometimes that like a modeling agency will have a crappy apartment that all of the models live in, but it's not a nice, glamorous place. Usually it's like crammed with bunk beds because none of them are making any money. And the only reason that the modeling agency has it there is because they have to live in New York. And so it's like some rotten hovel. But on Models, Inc., the agency owns a house on the beach in Malibu. And as a perk to the top girls, they get to live there. So, sure. It's a soap.
Yeah. So, but if you're going to do that, then don't bother with the office meetings.
Right.
But whatever.
Yeah. There don't need to be two different places for them to gather. But whatever. Terry comes home drunk to the fancy model house. Her older sister, Carrie, who is also a model, is played by Carrie Ann Moss, who will later be in the Matrix movies. And so she tells Terry to slow down and is all, I think you know what I gave up for you. So I guess put a pin in that for future episodes. We later find out that Carrie and Terry's mother died the day Terry was born. But Hillary finally does let Terry go on fairly friendly terms. Not so much Brian. Hillary apparently follows through on her blacklist threat before the door closed behind Terry. And we also later find out that Hillary's shitty son, David, who's the VP of the agency, was going to quit with Terry, but then he got cold feet and is a bitch about it when she confronts him. He's so bad. We'll come back to him later, too. At the going away party for Terry that they throw for some reason, Carrie then tries to climb onto Terry's coattails and also get out of the agency. But Terry tells her that she's dumping Carrie too, and then gets really drunk and makes everyone uncomfortable. And David suggests that she go lie down on the couch in his office. And the next thing we know, she's plunging off the balcony to her death. And the next morning, the cops think it was an accident. But as of the end of the episode, Detective Soto, who is totally Robert Beltran, aka Chakotay from Voyager, has descended on the office to tell Hillary it actually was not an accident, it was murder. And it's not until we see him watching a video retrospective that I figure out who Stephanie Romanoff reminded me of through the whole episode, because it was bugging me. She's got Polina Poroskova face.
Yeah,
that's who
she totally does.
Yeah. So she's, as you said, she's the only one who's tall. And she's got the cheekbones. But yeah, we don't really probably miss her, I would think.
And weirdly, like on Angel, these like narcotized line readings were perfect.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But for like a basically lawyer, like a hellmouth law firm, but that's not this.
Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty buzzy way to kick off a show. I mean, I love a show that kicks off someone you think is going to be kills off someone you think is going to be a main character.
And so. I had totally forgotten that she she went over the side this early.
Yes. And they show it, I mean, badly, but it's still fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So that's B plot. Finally, our A plot. Sarah is Julie's new victim. So Sarah is our bridge character, along with Joe, who's at a party at the model house in the cold open, joining her in some very bad body image messaging. Clip two.
Linda Holden's the one with them. She weighs like nothing.
Yeah, this party's murder my self-esteem.
Yeah, we don't talk
about
that.
You're a photographer?
Right.
Also, get over. I mean, Cassidy Ray is not good at this, but she does do, given how much like processy exposition she's supposed to be doing at right up top, she's doing a pretty good job for her. I think you also have to remember that like this was the era of like modelebrities and unauthorized books about the history of modeling and coffee table books about like the, you know, the supermodels singly, in pairs, in different pairs. Like this was really a thing. Unfortunately, they have to use actors and not actual models, and that's why this show didn't go. So,
well, that and like the center of modeling celebrity life is not LA, it's New York.
Yeah.
You know, like if you were really going to do that show, that's not where you would set it.
Also, it's the boys. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like just such, I don't even know what letter, P list. So bad. Yeah. Not cute.
Yeah. So, we see Joe again later when she and Jake are helping Sarah load her car so that she can move into the model house because she got called up to the majors. And I guess they like made them come in when they were not prepared because Grant's show has a goatee, which suits Jake so poorly that even Sarah has to like comment on it and like make fun of it a little bit. Like, yeah, it's very strange. They both are walking through this so much that it really reads like, oh, we're not going to get paid anymore for this. Okay, I guess. Like, anyway, I don't know if that's true, but that's how they're acting it. So one of the other models at this house is Julie Dante. She has a history with David romantically. She is also our resident rotten bitch who calls ahead to the cycle show that Sarah is working to make sure that she gets the same treatment that Julie did the day before, which means violent sexual harassment, possibly sexual assault.
Jimmy Kester, the cop from the famous sequence in Silence of the Lambs where he escapes.
Oh, I did not make that connection. Like
if the voice, if perhaps, listeners, you got your hands on this episode somewhere, and you're like, that seems like it's Patrick Saint, what's his name, that always has the mustache, but I can't place him without the mustache. I also thought it was him. It's not. It's, hey, it's that other bourbon-flavored voice guy who was the cop like shooting at the roof of the elevator.
Wow.
And once you see it, you're like, oh no, you're not supposed to play roles like this.
Oh no, dear.
Anyway, Jimmy Kester, may he rest.
Oh, wow. Okay. So David, even though he's the VP of the agency, is at this like shitty penny ante job. So he walks in on the end of this assault. I mean, I guess that is what makes it the end of the assault, to make sure that Sarah still gets paid, and threatened to turn the guy in, like maybe check with Sarah first that she doesn't want to actually turn him in. Also, you know, like whatever.
Also, what's with this Broadway choreo on the grabbing him by the lapels and then releasing them?
Yeah.
Take it easy, battlefield derp. So bad.
The assailant is like a foot and a half taller than David, like who is
also that
not tough.
No.
Meanwhile, Julie goes for a shoot that she finagled with a well-known photographer named Josh Lang, who is also clearly a sexual predator and barely bothers with any pretext before pouncing on her. And she seems receptive and unambivalent as they have sex, although afterward he only shoots her for about 30 seconds before hustling her out before his next real job gets there. And when she goes the next day to get the proofs that he promised her, his assistant says there was not even any film in the camera and Josh is a pig, like, clearly.
Yeah. You know? Also, it seemed like she knew that.
Right.
So maybe check the gate first.
Yeah.
Boss bitch. Mm. That was disappointing. I kind of wanted her to be like, well, this is gross, but I am owning this.
Right. Or, you know, lesson learned at least. But then she shows up to her. The next scene is her going to an audition that Sarah is also at. And she's in tears, which is like, what are you? You know, like, you're crying? Like, not that that is not a normal human reaction, but that's not a normal soap reaction for a person who is supposed to be this archetype.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So even though Sarah had previously yelled at Julie for setting Sarah up to get possibly raped at the cycle show, Sarah is nice to Julie now and offers her preparation H to fix herself up before going in for her audition. And they both get picked to walk in the Gerard Monty show in New York. What is with this name? Which, so then they get to the reception the night before. Josh the pig is there holding forth in clip three.
Well, the thing is, this supermodel hype, it's just that. These girls, they're hangers for the clothes. They walk around. So what? The truth? Designers make great clothes, and photographers take great shots. The models just walk around, and they got to be told how to do that.
I'm glad you brought up, like, I'm glad you brought up the historical context for this moment and when the show launched, because, like, it was a big deal. Like, modeling was having a cultural moment, and there is more to it than what this asshole character is saying. And I wish that the show had done more to explain, like, why he is wrong, other than just, well, he's a pig, so he probably is. Like, there is a skill to modeling, and the show, like, doesn't actually have anyone explain why he is wrong when he's saying this.
Yeah. And there's also an inordinate amount of garbage that has to be tolerated, especially if you're not one of the, you know, names that people know. So, I mean, opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Lost.
Indeed. So Julie makes a scene so that Sarah can lift his pass for the show the next day out of his pocket, which, A, like, David is there, and it would be a big deal for Julie to embarrass the agency like that, deserved or not. And B, no one believes that Sarah can pick a pocket.
Yeah.
But fine. No.
Especially because the pass is the size of a fucking pop-up menu.
Yeah. Like,
come on.
And why would he have it the day before he needs it? Like, why would it be on his person? But whatever. It works, whatever. And Julie and Sarah are friends. And before they say goodnight, David asks Sarah out when they get back to L.A., and she accepts. And Josh does get stopped at the door the next day, so mission accomplished there as well. On the runway, Cassidy Ray and Kylie Travis, who plays Julie, are so short. They're so short. it just can't be said enough. Like,
no,
you can't be that short on a runway. You just can't.
No, you can't. And these designs are like, I mean, it's from the mother-daughter fashion show.
Totally.
Like, they were dated even the day this aired. Like, some of these big hats, it's just like, oh my God. Like, the strains of the old original 90210 theme song were in my head with the tootling saxophone. And
yeah,
like, where's all the grungy stuff? Where are the docks?
I think I saw in the credits that this is Nolan Miller, but it's like, if that's true, it's a very, like, Bill Blassie kind of vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. Or Tahari. Yes.
Yeah.
It wishes.
So Gerard Monty, the designer, is happy with Sarah and pissed at Julie for being very obviously still drunk from partying the night before and almost falling off the stage twice that we see. So Julie was supposed to be the one to walk in the wedding gown for the finale, which it was actually supposed to be Terry, but, you know, she died. But Julie gets yanked and Sarah gets to do it instead. And Julie is not happy in clip four.
You're finished, bitch.
Friendship ended with Sarah.
And then it's just so Like, no designer would use Fields of Gold for this finale.
No.
The wedding dress is, I mean, it's fine, but it's like David's Bridal, mm-hmm. like basic in all the senses of that word.
Yep.
Like, she looks pretty, but like, just no.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, they're the same size, so she can wear the dress. They're both 5'3". There's no tall actors?
No. No.
Really? Minnie Driver couldn't come by, hang out?
And yet, the show is not good, but I don't hate it. I kind of like it. Like, it's fun. It's fun.
I mean, it's so, it's not exactly so bad it's good, but it's like so wrong. It like just is such a platypus and like mm-hmm. just doesn't get certain things and can't.
Yeah.
That it's like watching, there used to be, and I put this in my notes when I was watching it, there used to be this little sketch in Sesame Street or Electric Company, one of the shows I watched when I was teeny, that like they're just trying to explain how the wheel was invented. And it's like, well, okay, here's like a little cartoon caveman building a car and he tries it with triangle wheels, no dice. He tries mm-hmm. it with like hexagon wheels closer. Mm-hmm. And then he figures out he needs a circle. And it like, this is the TV, like the 90s TV version of the hexagon wheel car. It's like clonk, clonk, clonk. No.
Yeah.
But like they're almost there.
Yeah.
So it's worth watching.
Yeah.
Well, and, everyone is fairly terrible. And also everyone who's in it that went on to do anything else is such a baby that it's mm-hmm. kind of fun. So,
yeah. Well, let me posit this to you, because this is something that occurred to me at some point when I was doing the visual aids. And then it kind of stuck in my head and it never really left. The idea that the spinoff could have been about Lauren instead of Hillary. And it could have been about like Lauren's business running an escort agency in L.A.,
right.
Which, A, that would be a business that it would make more sense for it to be in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
B, it would be have just as many opportunities to have like glamorous, sexy women.
Mm-hmm.
C, there would have been just as much probably sexual assault as was in this episode, by the way.
Yeah.
D, it would have been more like kind of scandalous and like have more sizzle, because there would always be, you know, the frisson of them possibly like getting busted. And E, no offense to Linda Gray, but like, what's her name? Now I can't remember. Christian Alfonso, like so much better in that role than Linda Gray is as Hillary. Like,
yeah,
she's trying, but she's so wooden. And anytime she tries to like be intense or whatever, like the whispery voice, it's not doing it for me. She is the weakest part of the show. And that's saying something considering how bad all the guys are, which is fucking terrible.
Yeah. They're all awful. No, I totally agree with you. And I think there is some room for crossover there and some interesting things to say about like the overlap between actors who are broke and not great mm-hmm. or refuse to like play the game or
yep. were
deemed difficult because they fought off a rapist or whatever yep. the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just think that then is probably pretty big, and it's probably pretty big in New York too, but mm-hmm. this was before everything could just shoot at Silver Cup. So
yeah.
Like, I get that part of it, but
yeah, I mean, I don't, the X factor would be like, do I necessarily trust Aaron Spelling to tell an honest story about sex work? Obviously,
oh God, no.
I don't, but I think that would be, I mean, we get it. We're seeing it now this year with like shows like P-Valley, where it's like,
yeah.
You know, there is a capacity now to reckon with it honestly and like respect sex work as something that like some people choose. It's not all people getting trafficked. Like, there is a lot of gray area in what makes people go into it. And like, obviously 1994 was not the time. And I don't think that the version of this show that could have existed then would have been like the good version. But I think the Models Inc. of an escort agency would have been an interesting thought experiment.
Well, and Christian Alfonso is free.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, okay, we're going to have to wait for a vaccine, but okay. Yeah. Like, I'm, you know, I'll wait. She still looks totally credible. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. Universe, hear our cry. Because I think that would be a really good, interesting show that now, you're right, like now the world can make this show without, you know, being completely tone deaf.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. We solved it.
We did.